Good morning. My name's Rachel, and I wanted to tell you a little bit about some of my friends in high school to start off. So I'm not going to lie, I was not a popular kid in high school. I'm over it. It's okay. But me and my group of friends, we had a very diverse group of friends. Some of us were atheists, there were agnostics, there was someone who was a Muslim, we had friends who were Buddhist, and we had friends who said that they were Christian. So one of my friends who said we were Christian, we were talking one day. She had grown up in church. She went with her family every single Sunday. She grew up in Sunday school. She knew all the Bible stories. She knew all about Jesus and God. And so we were talking about the different things our different youth groups had been doing. And all of a sudden, the conversation changed a little bit. And she said, oh, Rachel, you know, I've been meaning to ask you. I'm getting, like, interested in this kind of, like, occult stuff. Would you ever kind of, like, want to join me in that? And I was like, no. I said no. But I was really, really confused. I said, you know, I thought you were a Christian. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And I think she was just as confused as I was. She knew what she believed. She believed in God, and she went to church, and she didn't understand how that would cause a disconnect for some reason. Another friend of mine who called herself a Christian, her parents were Buddhist, so she'd grown up in a Buddhist household, and somewhere along the line, she decided that that wasn't for her. She didn't really like it. She wasn't interested in it, and she came to my youth group with me a couple times. We did all those fun game nights. We did the cinnamon challenge, which is a terrible idea. Don't do it. It's really bad for your health. But we didn't know that at the time. But anyway, she had come to my youth group a couple times, and she liked the idea that there was a God who loved her. So she thought, okay, I'll be a Christian then. And then my third friend, who also said she was a Christian, she came from a very wealthy, well-respected family. They had really good morals, and they liked the idea of Christianity. They believed in God. They believed Christianity had good morals, so that's what they ascribed to. They chose to be Christians because of that. And so my friends, they were all very, very different. They all had different personalities. They all had different backgrounds they'd come from, but they all had that in common. They all said that they were Christian. They all believed that just because of this certain ideology or belief they had, that they were Christians. It didn't affect their life or any of the decisions they made. And a lot of the time, that's what a lot of people nowadays think Christianity is. It's just a set of beliefs or an ideology, some kind of thought process. But what did Jesus intend Christianity to be? Did Jesus really die so that we could claim some kind of religious label or check off that we were a Christian on Facebook? What did Jesus intend for it to actually mean? In Matthew 16, it says, "Then Jesus told his disciples, 'If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul?'" If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me. What does it mean to be a Christian? What is Jesus asking of his followers and disciples? What does it mean to take up our cross? So today, the cross has a very different significance than it would have in Jesus' day. I love shopping. I am very much the stereotypical city girl in some ways. My ideal day of hanging out with my friends would be a Starbucks in one hand, wearing my UGG boots, going out, looking downtown Toronto at all the clothes. I'm the stereotype. So one day, I decided while I was here to go shopping. And so I was looking at my two different options of Winners or Ardennes, which is very different from Toronto. So I decided to go to Ardennes. And I saw the cutest little necklace with like a little cross. It was gold with little diamonds in it. And I thought it was so pretty. So I decided to buy it. If I had been in downtown Toronto, I would have gone to Forever 21, which is my favorite store. You're learning a lot about my shopping habits, apparently. But if I had been in Forever 21, I would have been able to find all of these shirts with crosses or leggings with the cross pattern, cross earrings. And that's not a bad thing. I full out have a cross necklace. I've worn cross t-shirts. But for a lot of people, that's all the cross is. It's a fashion statement. You can also find crosses in churches, Exhibit A. You can find it in houses. You can find it on steeples, in artwork. For a lot of people, the cross is a symbol of love and a symbol of grace. And it should be. It's an incredible, incredible reminder of what God's done for us. It's an incredible reminder of his love and that Jesus came to save us. But that's not what the cross meant to people when Jesus was on earth. When Jesus was on earth, the cross was a symbol of death and a symbol of humiliation. It wasn't fashionable. The cross didn't give people the warm fuzzies or remind them of Sunday mornings with grandma. Crosses were used to execute people. And when a criminal was pronounced guilty, they'd be forced to carry it, knowing that that's what they were going to die on. So thinking about that, that's what that meant when Jesus said those words, what does it mean to take up our cross? It means to die to ourselves. This isn't a call for a fashionable Christianity or an easy Christianity or something that'll just give you the warm fuzzies all the time. This is a call for commitment. It's a call to total and complete surrender, being willing to give up anything and everything for God. And sometimes God is going to ask for hard things from us. Jesus once met a man who wondered what it would take to have eternal life. It says, as he was setting out on a journey, a man ran up to him and knelt before him and asked him, "Good teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Do not steal. Don't bear false witness. Don't defraud. Honor your mother and father." And he said to him, "Teacher, I've kept all these things from my youth up." Looking at him, Jesus felt a love for him and said to him, "One thing you lack. Go and sell all you possess and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven. And then come and follow me." But at these words, he was saddened, and he went away grieving, for he was one who owned much property. This man had everything. He owned a lot of property. In different translations, he's described as rich and wealthy. He would have had a house and nice clothes. He probably wanted for nothing. If he had lived today, he probably had the latest iPad with all the newest updates. And from the sounds of it, he wasn't just rich, but he was also a really nice guy. He followed the rules and the laws. He loved his mama. He kept commands. He was a good and ethical person. But when it really came down to it, Jesus was asking for more than just an ethical way to live his life. When it really came down to it, and Jesus asked him for more, he couldn't do it. His physical possessions were too important. I'm not telling you that God is going to tell you to sell all of your possessions or to be the next Mother Teresa. You don't necessarily need to do that to pick up your cross. But God can still ask hard things of us. Maybe that could be to make an unpopular decision at work that you know others aren't going to like, but you know it's the right thing to do. It could be to see that kid at school that everyone else is picking on and standing up for them, even though you're afraid. It could be stepping outside of your comfort zone, reaching out to someone with love and with grace, even though it's inconvenient. It could be giving up something you really want or stepping out in leadership, even though you don't feel equipped. Being willing to pick up our cross and follow Jesus means giving him control of our life and the decisions that we make. I tend to always picture picking up my cross in my head as this big, monumental life decision, and it can be. But it's also not just a one-time thing. Jesus didn't say to just pick up your cross and prove that you could do it, prove that you're good enough to be able to do it and can follow him, and then to put it back down. He didn't say to just pick up your cross and then stay where you are. Jesus said to pick up your cross and follow him. Jesus had 12 disciples. He had them following him. And in that culture, being a disciple basically meant that you were a student. You would follow a teacher, you would try to learn from them and become like them. And that's what the disciples were doing with Jesus. They were trying to learn and follow him, become more like him. And by following Jesus, we're trying to learn and to become more like him, just like the disciples were. Christianity, following Jesus, it's not just a one-time decision. It's more than saying the ABC prayer. It's more than that really emotional moment you had at the altar at History Maker 2 years ago. It's more than just an ethical way to live. It's a decision every single day to look to God and to follow him. By following God, we're trying to become more and more like Jesus. Becoming a follower of Jesus means trying to live like he did. It means following his teachings and how he said we should live our lives. And sometimes that's really hard. We live in a society and a culture that says that there's no absolutes. We live in a culture and a society that says that what's right for one person might not be right for another. We live in a culture that says it's okay to step on other people and think of yourself first if it means getting ahead. That a little white lie is okay. That marriage is just a piece of paper or a contract and that it doesn't matter. But being a follower of Christ means choosing to follow Jesus even when what culture says sounds more appealing. I'm going to tell you a little story, and I'm hoping you're not going to judge me. I'm not perfect, and sometimes I lie, which isn't a good thing. But I have this problem where when I get really distracted or I have a lot on my mind, I get kind of absent-minded and leave things in various places. So on youth nights, sometimes I will be using my keys for something and absent-mindedly put them somewhere else, and sometimes that happens to be locked inside of another room, which is very unfortunate. Luckily, Mikey is one of my amazing youth leaders, and he has a set of keys, so he's come to my rescue many times. But there was one day where I was honestly trying so, so hard to specifically not lose them that day. I thought, you know what, I'm going to leave them in my purse. If I leave it in my purse, I'll know where it is. I'm not going to lose it or put it somewhere else or forget. But I didn't fully think it through because I left my purse with my keys in it in my locked office. It wasn't my proudest moment. But I thought, you know what, it's okay. You know, this is embarrassing. This is humiliating. But I can get away with this. No one has to know. I'll just go to Mikey and I'll say, hey, I left my keys upstairs. Can I just borrow yours for 2 seconds? I don't feel like going upstairs to get mine. So I went to Mikey and I lied and borrowed his keys and realized he doesn't have a key to my office anyway. So I had to admit to my leaders that I'd lied and it was embarrassing. And they were very, very gracious. They only teased me a little bit. But it all worked out. I got my keys back. Pete came to my rescue. But I get it. Sometimes the easy way out isn't God's way. Sometimes what seems more appealing isn't God's way. And it's so easy to do. Sometimes those small little life choices, like being honest when you lock your keys in your office, seems less important. One little lie won't hurt. I'll do better tomorrow, or I'll ask God for forgiveness. It's okay. But taking up your cross and following Jesus means in the small and in the mundane parts of life. having every single part of your week committed to following Jesus, not just Sundays while we're here together. It means allowing God to change you and transform you to be more like his son. Sometimes what God asks from his followers is uncomfortable, or it's scary, or it doesn't seem to make sense to us. Sometimes choosing to follow God, choosing to let him change us, can be a painful process, like we saw in the video. But that's where we need to learn to trust. We are God's masterpiece. By choosing to trust and by choosing to follow him, he's changing us and transforming us to be more like his son. We have a God who loves us, a God who sees us as his beloved children. Before this passage that we've been talking about, Jesus and his disciples had had a conversation where Jesus had asked them, "Who do you think that I am?" And Peter replied saying, "Well, I know there's people who have said that you're a prophet or that you're a great teacher, but Jesus, I think you're the Messiah." The Messiah had been someone that the Jewish people had been looking forward to for centuries. In their mind, he was this incredible hero sent from God, coming to save them from the Romans. Foretold by their prophets of old. So when Jesus started talking about being killed, about dying, there were probably huge question marks going off in their head. They were probably thinking, "Does not compute. What are you talking about? I thought you were the Messiah." But like Jesus said to Peter, they were seeing things from a human perspective, not from God's perspective. In their minds, they were hoping for a Messiah that would come and would offer them physical freedom from the Romans. But God had a far, far better plan. God's plan was to offer spiritual freedom, not just to them, but to centuries and centuries and centuries of people later, to us. His plan was to restore us into right relationship with God. What the disciples were hoping for, it seemed like a good thing. But what God had in store was so, so much better. And oftentimes, all of the time, that's what following God is like. Sometimes following God, what he asks of us doesn't make sense, or it's hard, or changing is painful. But we're looking at it from a human perspective, from our own personal experience. God sees everything. He sees our future. He has great and incredible plans for each and every single one of us. He has a different perspective, and he has great plans. And even though the process can be painful, even though following him can be hard and has sacrifice involved, it is so, so worth it in the end. Today we saw and are going to continue to see some people who have demonstrated that commitment that they're making to Jesus, to follow him, to take up their cross. And I wanted to encourage you, if you've made that commitment, if you've decided to follow Jesus, keep pressing on, keep going. Like it said in the video, it's a process. And sometimes it's hard, but it is so worth it. And God is with you through every single part of it. And if this is something that's new to you, if this is something that you've never thought of before, even though it can be hard sometimes, I want to tell you personally that it is so, so worth it. Looking at from where I've started in my relationship with God to where I am now, and I'm by no means perfect or at the end of my journey. God has taken me so far and changed me and transformed me and made me better. That decision that I've made and continue to make has been the best decision of my life. And if you make that decision to take up your cross and to follow Jesus, I can guarantee you it will be the best decision that you make too. God loves us. He doesn't want to leave us in our mess. And when we let him and when we choose to give him control and to follow him, he transforms us.